This file is meant as an introduction. We've provided some audio files that cover all of the material in the book. The purpose is to allow you to review your reading and the material that's discussed in your class. But I want to stress that the final word on the material that you need to know for the exam is provided by your instructor, and secondly, by the textbook. These files are really meant to refresh your memory and to reinforce points that are made in the lectures and in the textbook. Again, these lectures are not the final word. They are meant only as a broad overview. Do not rely on the material in these lectures. Secondly, I want to urge you to take a look at the preface before you start the textbook so you understand the chapter organizations and the purpose of the various components that are included in each one of the chapters. I'm not going to take the time to cover that at the moment because what I wanted to do is talk about the fact that this book is somewhat unique in that it uses actual cases. Now, why did I do that? Well, I strongly believe in the educational value of case analysis. I found that people enjoy and easily observe material taught through the case method. In my experience, learning is encouraged when you're presented with concrete factual situations that illustrate legal rules. The case method also lends itself to an interactive educational environment in which you can put yourself in the position of the prosecutor or defense attorney. The case method is also really beneficial for assisting you to refine your skills in critical reading and analysis and in logical thinking, skills that are going to be important no matter what your career aspirations. Well, studying cases was first introduced in 1870 by Harvard Law professor Christopher Columbus Langdell, and is the primary method of instruction in nearly all American law schools. The study of cases, according to Langdell, assists you to understand the principles of criminal law, improve your skills in critical reading and thinking, acquaint yourself with legal vocabulary and procedures, appreciate how judges make decisions, and learn how to apply the law to the facts. Now, the cases in the book have been heavily edited to highlight the most important points. Some non-essential material has been omitted to assist you in reading and understanding the material. You may want to go ahead and read the entire unedited case in the library or online. The cases you read are the product of an adversary system in which prosecutors and defense attorneys present evidence and examine witnesses at trial. The evaluation of the facts is the responsibility of the jury, or in the absence of the jury, the judge. A case heard by a judge without a jury is termed a bench trial. The adversary system is premised on the belief that the truth will emerge from the clash between two dedicated attorneys zealously presenting their cause. The lowest courts in the judicial hierarchy are trial courts. The proceedings are recorded in trial transcripts that recite the selection of jurors, testimony of witnesses, arguments of the lawyers, and rulings by the judge. Individuals convicted before a trial court may appeal the guilty verdict to appellate or appeal courts. The cases you read in this book, in most instances, are the decisions issued by appellate court judges reviewing a guilty verdict entered against a defendant at trial. These reviews are based on transcripts and briefs. Briefs are lengthy written arguments submitted to the court by the prosecution and defense. The two sides may also have the opportunity to engage in an oral argument before the appellate court. In issuing a decision, the appellate court will accept as established those facts that are most favorable to the party that prevailed at the trial court level. Defendants appealing a verdict by a trial court ordinarily file appeal with an intermediate court of appeals, which in many states provides the defendant with a new trial, or what we call trial de novo. The losing party may then file an additional appeal to the state Supreme Court. The party who is appealing is termed the appellant, and the second name is typically the party against whom the appeal is filed, or the appellee. By that I mean the second name and the title of the case. You will also notice the insertion of V between the names of the parties, which is an abbreviation for the Latin versus. Individuals who have been convicted and have exhausted their state appeals may file a constitutional challenge or collateral attack against their conviction in federal court. The first name in the title is usually the name of the prisoner bringing the case or the petitioner, and the second name or respondent is typically the warden or individual in charge of the prison in which the petitioner is incarcerated. This may be the state attorney general. In a collateral attack, an inmate bringing an action files a petition for habeas corpus review requesting a federal court to issue an order requiring the state to demonstrate that the petitioner is lawfully incarcerated. The ability of a petitioner to compel the state to demonstrate that he or she has been lawfully detained is one of the most important safeguards for individual liberty and is guaranteed in Article 1, Section 9, Clause 2 of the U.S. Constitution. Federal courts may also preside over criminal cases charging a defendant with a violation of a federal statute. There are three levels of federal court. First, there are 94 district courts, which are the trial courts. Appeals may be taken to 13 courts of appeals and ultimately to the U.S. Supreme Court. The U.S. Supreme Court generally has a choice whether to review a case. 4 of the 9 judges must vote to grant a writ of certiorari or an order to review a decision of a lower court. Now, when you look at cases, you'll see that they're divided into various parts. The title, the name of the parties in the litigation. After that, you'll see a citation. That is the legal reporter where the case can be found in the law library. Increasingly, however, you'll find that you can access cases online. Immediately thereafter, you'll see the name of the judge who wrote the opinion. Now, if you looked at the legal reporter version of the case, you'll see that the next portion of the case outlines the points that are made in the case, and you'll see numbers next to these points, and these are called head notes, and the head note indicates, it's a number, where you can find that portion of the discussion in the decision. For instance, note number 1, note number 2, note number 3. There also is a summary of the case and of the decisions of other courts that have heard the case. These outlines have been omitted from the edited cases reprinted in the book. Now, when you look at a judicial opinion, you'll see a number of component parts. You'll see the history of the case. You'll see the facts of the case. Then you'll see a discussion of the law. We've called this reasoning in the text. And then you'll see the holding or decision. So when you look at the cases in the book, you're going to see that they're divided into the following. Issue, what is the question that the court's trying to answer? Facts, what are the facts of the case? Reasoning, that covers the legal discussion engaged in by the court and the holding or the decision of the court. So you have issue, facts, law, and holding. The reasoning, again, is the explanation offered by the judge for the holding. Judges often include comments and observation. In Latin, we call this obiter dicta or comments for the bench on a wide range of legal and factual concerns that provide important background but may not be central to the holding. These comments may range from legal history to discussion of the judge's philosophy of punishment. Judges typically rely on precedents or holdings of other courts. Precedent, or stare decisis, literally translates to as to stand by precedent and stand by settled points. The court may follow a precedent or point out that the case at hand should be distinguished from the precedent and calls for a different rule. Appellate courts typically are comprised of multi-judge panels consisting of 3 or more judges, depending on the level of the court. The judges typically meet and vote in a case and issue a majority opinion, which is recognized as the holding of the case. Judges in the majority may choose to write a concurring opinion supporting the majority, but this typically is based on slightly different grounds. On occasion, a majority of judges agree on the outcome of the case, but are unable to reach a consensus on the reasoning. In these instances, there typically is a plurality opinion, as well as one or more concurring opinions. In cases in which a court issues a plurality opinion, the decisions of the various judges in the majority must be closely examined to determine the precise holding and reasoning of the case. A judge in the minority has the discretion to write a dissenting opinion. Other judges in the minority may also issue separate opinions or join the dissenting opinion of another judge. In those instances in which a court is closely divided, the dissenting opinion with the passage of time may actually come to reflect the view of the majority of the members of the court. The dissent may also influence the majority opinion. The judges in the majority may feel compelled to answer the claims of the dissent or compromise in order to attract judges who may be sympathetic to the dissent. You should also keep in mind that cases carry different degrees of authority. The decisions of the Ohio Supreme Court possess binding authority on lower courts within Ohio. The decision of a lower-level Ohio court that fails to follow precedent will likely be appealed by the losing party and reversed by the appellate courts. The decisions of the Ohio Supreme Court, however, are not binding on lower courts outside of Ohio, but may be considered by these other tribunals to possess persuasive authority. Of course, precedents are not written in stone, and courts will typically adjust the law to meet new challenges. So, just to summarize, each state court system is fairly autonomous from the others. The Ohio Supreme Court decisions are binding on courts in Ohio. They may be viewed as persuasive authority, but not binding by a court in Pennsylvania that's looking for insight onto how to decide a case. Again, and remember, when reading the cases in the book, you'll see that they are divided into facts, issues, reasoning, and holding. There'll also be a number of questions following the case that will help you understand the case, along with case notes that are other decisions that are related to the decision you read and may help provide some insight into the issues that were discussed in the full case that's reprinted in the book. Now, your instructor may ask you to brief or summarize the main points of cases reprinted in the textbook. A student brief is a concise shorthand written description of the case and is intended to assist you in understanding and organizing the material and preparing for class and examinations. A brief generally includes several standard features. Now, in the appendix to Chapter 1, you'll find broad guidelines for the proper form of a brief, and you need to pay attention to your instructor's advice on this. So I'm not going to go through those. You should read them for yourself, because each instructor has a different way of approaching a brief. And some instructors may not require you to brief a case at all. But in general, a brief is a shorthand way of summarizing a case to help you prepare for class and study and to refine your own thinking. In addition, you'll probably develop your own personal approach to reading and briefing cases. But in reading cases, keep the following in mind. It's not always easy the first time around to understand a case, so I suggest skimming it, read the case slowly a second time, write down the relevant facts in your own words, identify the relevant facts, issues, reasoning, and holding. Don't merely copy the language from the case. Again, try and put it in your own words. Consult the glossary or law dictionary for the definition of unfamiliar legal terms. The brief should be precise and limited to essential points, and bring your brief to class and compare your analysis to the instructor's. Be aware that each case is commonly thought of as standing for a legal rule or proposition. So ask yourself, what is the rule that's established in this case? Consider why the case is included in the textbook and how the case fits into the general topic covered in the chapter. Remain an active and critical learner and think about the material you are reading. Consider how the case may relate to other areas you have studied. A case on murder, for instance, may raise interesting issues concerning criminal intent, causality, and conspiracy. This will help you integrate the material in the class. Lastly, outline the material. Some instructors may suggest that you develop an outline of the material covered in the class. This can be used to assist you in preparing for examinations. Now, I'm not going to go through the technicalities of citations, but consult, again, the appendix to Chapter 1 so that when you look at a case and see all those confusing numbers and abbreviations immediately following the case, you'll have some understanding of what those mean. And if you want to go look up the case in the library where it can be found. And again, most of the cases you read will be available on the web. In conclusion, in this introductory discussion, I want to emphasize again that the material on the web, the audio files, are merely an introduction, an overview. It's designed to reinforce the material in the lectures and in the class. You should not view these as the final word. In terms of the exam, pay attention to your instructor and, secondly, to the book, but do not rely on these tapes. These are merely to help to reinforce the material and to provide you the ability to review the course when you may not have access to your book or to a computer. So, thanks very much. Look forward to sharing the experience of this class with you this semester.